Ever wonder how Mizzou seems to produce quality defensive linemen and NFL backup quarterbacks?
How about why former Mizzou wrestlers want to fight Jake Paul?
Or are you curious about why Missouri men's basketball losing to 15 seed Norfolk State in the 2012 NCAA tournament wasn't all that bad?
Well, I can guarantee two of those three. But if you want the best information on Mizzou football, basketball, and everything else MU, listen to the Columbia Daily Tribune's Mizzou Sports Podcast featuring me, Tribune Sports Editor Chris Kwasinski.
And me, Tribune Mizzou Athletics beat reporter Eric Blum. We'll discuss all things Tigers, including Joe Exotic.
Did he play for Mizzou?
No, but we did have a dentist in town grace the cover of ESPN the magazine. In all seriousness, we'll break down every game, press conference, and big move from Columbia.
We'll give expert analysis on Missouri and explain how each result matters to every MU fan.
We may sprinkle in some takes on other things, too. Like how Shakespeare's Pizza is a can't-miss Columbia experience, but their pizza is just good. Maybe third best in town.
Yeah, that shouldn't offend anybody. But if you want the premier, unfiltered, direct podcast on Mizzou athletics, subscribe to the Columbia Daily Tribune's Mizzou Sports Podcast with new episodes streaming on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and other platforms every Thursday.
This is the Mizzou Sports Podcast, presented by the Columbia Daily Tribune.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Mizzou Sports Podcast. My name is Eric Plum, breaking down Mizzou sports with you every week here on the show. Joining me, as always, is the Tribune sports editor, Chris Kwasinski. How are you doing, Chris?
I am doing great, thank you.
Where do you want to start this week?
That's a good question, because where do you start with the Central Michigan team that might not be with its head coach?
I don't know. Well, we'll start. I guess we'll start there. You listen to our trailer to start our new trailer to start this episode, which is, as Chris says, kind of meta. Listening to our own trailer for a podcast you're already listening to, so thank you. But yes, yesterday it came out that Jim McElwain has appendicitis. We don't know. It's not likely, but we don't know whether he's going to be in Columbia for this opening matchup. How do you think that affects the team at all, or does it affect Central Michigan?
I don't think it affects the outcome at all, but I definitely think it affects Central Michigan when you talk about, you know, how just from a morale standpoint. I mean, it's first game of the season, your head coach isn't even there. Like, I feel like that has to affect you a little bit when you think about it from that point of view.
Yeah, I would think so. It's not like, you know, Nick Saban's not there, or you can't replace a head coach. But if you can't do the things that your head coach is teaching you without your head coach there, you're not going to be a successful team anyway. You know, he's not out on the sidelines, or does not come off the sidelines, in a normal game anyway. So, you know, of course, prayers up to Jim McElwain. Hope you're better. You know, I've had, you know, like friends of family members who have had, you know, appendicitis in the past, and it's not fun from what I can see. I've never had it, but, you know.
Well, I have.
Oh, you have?
Yeah.
So give your appendicitis story.
This is a throwback all the way to 2008. I was actually at my eighth grade school dance. We spent the entire week preparing, buying a new suit. In preparation for graduation and all that kind of stuff.
Middle school graduation, the highest of honors.
I was stoked. I was living life. I was a big man on campus, only because I was the tallest person there. But still,
literally, not figuratively in this case, the tall man, big man on campus.
Oh yeah,
or both maybe. I shouldn't be short selling
I wasn't a popular kid, but In any case, I remember going to this dance, eating some terrible catered food, and then sitting in a bathroom for 2 hours and being like, why does my body hurt? Why is this not okay? We actually talked about this in the newsroom when the news broke about Jim McElwain yesterday. We're like, well, how long does it take to recover? It took me like a week and a half, but that's only because I was a child. Mind you, I was a child. I was going, you know, I'd never been in the hospital before. That was my first major medical event in my life.
It was appendicitis.
Oh, yeah.
He said they were having surgery. Do you need surgery, whatever that's referring to?
Oh, yeah. But it depends if your appendix bursts or not.
Did yours?
No.
We don't know whether his did or not.
From what it sounds like, they just went in and just took it out. Like, what they do with me, it's called laparoscopic surgery. They just do little tubes, get in there, and just break it up and pull it out. super simple. And if you're an adult or a grown-up and not a baby like me, then you'd probably be over it in a couple days.
Right. So we don't know yet. And I have to ask, did you have a date to this appendicitis dance?
No.
Okay. About to say, it's not like prom where like your prom date's just alone now because you're in the bathroom with your appendix. No. Okay. Well, good to know. We went down memory lane there. I've had heartburn and like food poisoning, but I guess some of it was, but I guess never it was appendicitis. Anyway, but yes, back to Central Michigan here. But yes, this is all relevant information here with no head coach coming to town, and Jim McElwain, former Florida head coach, and never got appendicitis in Florida with all the great food of Gainesville, but gets it in Michigan, I guess. I don't know what that says about that. But if Central Michigan is going to somehow pull this upset, where would you see, knowing that you know more about Mizzou now, as a route for them to pull the upset? Would this be Mizzou making unforced errors and letting them into the game, or does Central Michigan have a route here regardless of what Mizzou does?
Central Michigan has to score points on defense and or special teams. It has to be something that Mizzou allows them to do. It's got to be Connor Bazak throwing a pick six. It's got to be whoever kicks, returns their kicks going 98 yards for a touchdown. It's got to be stuff that Mizzou lets slips through the cracks and that kind of stuff, and really just doesn't take this opponent seriously. You've seen it so many times. I mean, I think back to the last major upset Central Michigan pulled, which was against Oklahoma State, which at the end was a play they just didn't defend properly. They allowed that last second play. I think it was Cooper Rush was quarterback and just chucked a massive bomb all the way to like the 10-yard line to the receiver who lateraled it, and the guy just ran to the opposite side of the end zone for a touchdown to win the game. I mean, that's a play that if you play it properly, you win the game. I mean, there was a bunch of defensive players on the strong side of the ball and no one on the weak side, so that's how they did it.
Yeah, I actually remember that. I don't know if it was Cooper Rush or not. I don't know who the guy's name now, or he graduated last year. It was the guy before him, and I can't remember his name either. I'm not up on Oklahoma State football, I guess. I cover the SEC, not the Big 12, and we're bringing in Oklahoma and Texas, but Oklahoma State's staying away.
Right.
I guess. Well, whatever. But, yeah, I would think that if Central Michigan is going to win this game, one name you're going to keep hearing is Khalil Pimpleton. Khalil Pimpleton is the last Mizzou player who I would assume was Khalil Pimpleton. And I'm trying to think of a relevant example because Mizzou hasn't had that guy who, I guess maybe LaDainian Washington would be the last guy like that, a guy who could play quarterback and just throw the ball, which LaDainian really didn't do. But, a guy who could also run the ball and be your kick returner and punt returner and your main wide receiver. I'm not sure Missouri's had a guy like that in a long time. I mean, Jamon Moore, was a little bit like that. I mean, there just hasn't been – I'm trying to rack my brain of a guy who is like that from Mizzou. Jarrell Jackson wasn't like that. I mean, there's a lot of different people who, just have been dynamic players, but none quite like Pimpleton. And you've had other SEC schools. Like last year we saw Kadarius Toney at Florida. There's just guys out there who are great. Missouri just hasn't had a guy like that. Not that a guy couldn't do that, but – if Central Michigan's going to win this game, this might have to be Khalil Pimpleton and then everyone else.
Right. I mean, I think back to just a game-changing player. The last person that I personally remember from Mizzou has to be someone like Jeremy Macklin. I mean, a guy that you can just chuck the ball to, who can return kicks and that kind of stuff, that can play in multiple parts of the game. It doesn't have to be just as a dynamic receiver, although that would help a lot.
But Jeremy Macklin never did the Wildcat. I thought of him, but who actually ran the Wildcat right in that way? Maybe it's Michael Wilson, who's on the team now. Last year, he was the last Missouri player, the only Missouri player to catch and throw a touchdown pass. I mean, there's only been a few who have done that, but like Michael Wilson is one of them. I mean, he's one of, I think, 20 players in program history who have thrown, ran for, and caught a touchdown pass. So all that saying that Pimpleton is going to be a guy that I think that they go to over and over and over again until either Missouri has clearly shut him down and they need to do something else, or he breaks through and beats Missouri. I mean, is there another route here? I mean, I don't think, even with how good, the Harrison guy on defense is going to be for them, is there another route here for Central Michigan? I mean, listen, if they win this game, I would be a little shocked. But it would not be like SEMO beating them. Like, this is a Central Michigan team who went to the MAC title game 2 years ago. Like, there's a lot of talent on this team. There's a lot of good young talent on this team. Who we think the starting quarterback will be, is Jacob Sermon, the Washington transfer. Jim McElwain said they might play multiple quarterbacks. That means nothing. I mean, really, at this point, Jim McElwain's, I don't want to call him the quarterback whisperer, but He just seems to know how to push those buttons in that way. But when you have a Washington transfer who played behind Jacob Eason and really just has that experience, you don't go with a redshirt freshman kid. You just don't. Or maybe I'm completely wrong. I mean, just it just seems like to me he's going to be the starter. Is there another route here for Central Michigan to win this game?
I guess you just talk about what do you want coming out of your quarterback. You know, do you want Sermon, a guy who is probably a better passer than Richardson is? I mean, I know the report on Richardson, he's got a big arm, he can move, but the accuracy might not be there totally completely. But I mean, but when you think about a player like that, does that athleticism help you more than just being a pure pocket passer where you can try and pick apart an SEC defense? And I mean, but to get back to your question, I mean, really, I don't think there is another way. It's either Pemberton breaks this game open by himself or Mizzou loses the game.
Yeah. Those being the two ways Central Michigan wins it, that being that. And for Daniel Richardson, the thing that I looked at is he's 5'11".
Yeah.
I know Drew Brees is there. I know Russell Wilson's there. There have been other guys who are that height that can win, but they have just premier athleticism and everything else, and their one red flag is their height. I don't think Daniel Richardson applies to that category. I could be wrong, but if he has a phenomenal arm and just can run the option, but that's not their style, no. Or something. If he's a pocket passer at 5'11", that could work in the MAC. Name an SEC quarterback who's been purely a pocket passer at 5'11". Just seriously, who?
Maybe Chase Daniel back, but that was the Big 12 day.
Chase Daniel was 6'1", 6'2".
Is he really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, he's not that short. No. I mean, Kelly Bryant was 6'2", but he wasn't that great at that either. I mean, I say that because there might not be an answer. Like, South Carolina's quarterback a couple years ago, I forget his name, Kadarian Joyner might be his name, who started the game a couple years ago here in South Carolina. And they tried that after Ryan Helinski had that weird fumble into the end zone where he batted down his own pass and threw it backwards and was like, that's an incomplete pass. I'm like, no, that's a fumble because you threw it behind you right into the end zone. Beyond that, no, I just don't see a way. And the other possible quarterback choice here, Tyler Pape for Central Michigan, seems to be kind of just a combination of the two. Young like Richardson, but has the mold type of a Jacob Sermon. So we'll see where they go from there. We talked about a lot of these different Central Michigan things with our special guest this week, Christian Buwer of Central Michigan Life. He's a student there, broke down everything Central Michigan, and then when we come out of this break, we'll talk about Jake Paul, give our final predictions, and much more. So without further ado, here's my interview from earlier this week with Christian Buwer.
Joining the Mizzou Sports Podcast this time is the Central Michigan football beat reporter for Central Michigan Life, Christian Buwer. How you doing, man?
Not bad. Good to be here.
Yeah, thanks for jumping on with us. Just kind of give us an intro, first off, to you and this year's Central Michigan team.
Yeah, so I'm going into my third year at Central Michigan. I'm currently a journalism student. I started my career, my writing career, covering the CMU volleyball, field hockey, soccer teams, and worked my way up to football. And now, with the graduation of some upperclassmen, I've kind of stepped into full-fledged beat reporter role. And what better time, really? I mean, there's so many storylines going on, heading into kind of a make-or-break year for Coach Jim McElwain. He tells us that year three was circled for him. You know, it's his guys now. It's his team. Kind of set the conference on fire in his first year. He took a team that was 1-11 and essentially with the same guys won the MAC West and took them to the championship game. Last year, got some subpar quarterback play, just a lot of uncertainty at the position, and finished 500. And he called that 500 finish unacceptable. So heading into a big year, a lot of questions, and that's what makes this job so much fun, and looking forward to week one.
That's a great transition into one of the main questions I had for you was, a lot of people remember Jim McElwain from his days in Florida, especially at Missouri. Just where do things currently reside with him, and would you say he's on a hot seat? You said year three is important, but where do things kind of just reside with the head coach?
Yeah, no, it's really uncertain because, you know, at the end of the day, Jim McElwain's Jim McElwain, and he showed what he can do in year one. And really, if he's on the hot seat, I mean, who else is coming to Mount Pleasant of his caliber? So I wouldn't necessarily put him on the hot seat. I will say that this is a big year, just because it kind of defines where the program's at. McElwain in his first 2 years did a really good job recruiting. He did a really good job selling this program. I remember his first year, during that recruiting cycle, I'd have been a senior in high school, but following closely with that, it was just really neat to see all these guys that, you know, he was flipping commits and bringing in three-star guys. The amount of three-star guys on this roster is incredible. And a name that he brought in, who has since transferred, was Jordan Ingram, who's now at Auburn. Ingram was a guy who came in 2020. He's the highest rated recruit now Central Michigan's ever had. And he spent the 2020 season, interesting enough, McElwain sent home a bunch of the freshmen in 2020 because the Mid-American Conference originally canceled its season. So he sent home a bunch of the freshmen. Ingram was one of them. And then when he got on campus in the spring, he ended up transferring up to Auburn. Never got to see him play, but the caliber back that he was interesting. I think that kind of speaks to where he's at as a recruiter. But at the end of the day, he's got to win football games. And I think that's part of the reason why you're going to see him travel to Missouri. And in a couple of weeks, you're going to go down to Baton Rouge and play LSU. It's really interesting because you, at the end of the day, McElwain, if he wants to continue bringing in these guys, he's got to sell this team with wins. They've got a nice new building, you know, the Chippewa Champion Center facility. And that's going to help with recruiting, but at the end of the day, winning's winning. And so McElwain, if he wants to help his case, he's got to get this team right back on the right track. He's got to get them back to 500, above 500, and he's got to get them back in the MAC title game.
You mentioned the subpar quarterback play. I think it's a trend throughout Missouri's even first six games of the year. Transfer quarterback after transfer quarterback. It's astonishing how many Missouri that used to be or currently still are at the Power 5 level. You know, and I know you were at the press conference with Jim McElwain earlier today, and he said multiple guys are going to be playing quarterback. I don't know if I buy that, but what's your read on the quarterback situation with the Chippewas?
Yeah, so McElwain's a former quarterback himself, and he's kind of bought into that strategy that's going on today, where if you don't name a quarterback heading into the game, it's kind of a strategic advantage, which I understand, because these guys on Central Michigan roster have very different, distinct skill sets. The way I see it, it's between three guys. Jacob Sermon's a Washington transfer from 2018 recruiting class. Sermon spent 3 years with the Huskies. He sat behind Jacob Eason, who's now with the Indianapolis Colts, for 2 years and then lost out on the quarterback battle to Dylan Morris, who's their starter now. And Sermon's a guy who, from all indication, you know, we haven't had any in-person practice access this year, but from all indication, Sermon has a very, very good arm. And that fits well with what Central Michigan wants to do. They're breaking in a new offensive coordinator, Kevin Barbe, but he's not necessarily new because he's just switching positions. He was the wide receivers coach here. And Barbe is going to probably do the same things that Charlie Fry did when he was the offensive coordinator here before leaving to coach quarterbacks with the Miami Dolphins. And basically what they want to do is they want to stretch the field. They want to throw the ball deep. They want to set themselves up comfortably so that in the second half they can pound the run game. And Sermon and his skill set fits well with that. However, the mobility with him is a little bit of a concern. That brings me to Daniel Richardson. Daniel Richardson's a redshirt freshman. This third year on campus, you know, with the eligibility stuff, he's just still a redshirt freshman. Richardson was the guy last season for the first four games. And Richardson showed some promise. The arm talent is unquestionably there. He can throw the ball with the best of them. His problem is his size. He's only 5'10", and that caused some trouble. You saw it in some games if you watched Central Michigan. He had some trouble getting balls batted down at the line against these taller defenders, these edge rushers. That caused some problems for him. There's also a little bit of a durability concern. He missed the last two games with a high ankle sprain. Just questions about whether or not he can withstand the rigors that come with battling in the Mid-American Conference. My third candidate for this quarterback job is Tyler Pape. Pape, another one of those guys. I mentioned Ingram earlier. Pape is a guy who redshirted in 2020. And, you know, asking Coach McElwain about it, he says he wishes he never would have sent him home. Because I think if Pape was on campus for 2020, he could be a guy who could very well win this job. All indications out of fall camp have been nothing but good things about Tyler, standing 6'4", really good arm, and he has the mobility as well. And I think that's something McElwain likes. He likes guys who can get things done with their feet. He said the biggest thing in his press conference with his quarterback is he wants a guy that can move the field on their own. You know, it's not just guys making the right completions. It's guys being accurate and guys being able to make plays on their own. So I think Pape is a step behind the first two guys, Sermon and Richardson, just because of his inexperience. But as the year goes on, man, I think he's going to be a big player in this conversation. Real quick, if I had to give you a starter for week one, you know, he mentioned multiple guys. I still think this is Sermon's job to lose. And I also think he's kind of throwing his joker out there because last season they did a lot of Wildcat stuff with Khalil Pimpleton, the wide receiver as well. So when he says multiple guys are going to play quarterback, that doesn't necessarily they're all going to be quarterbacks on the roster.
Makes sense. Yeah, talking to Phil Steele a couple weeks ago, who also talked to McElhane, I'm pretty sure he thinks Sermon is getting the job too, and that would have been my pick too. You go with the guy with the most high risk, you know, the littlest risk and the most potential in a season opener against Missouri, where really Central Michigan, I don't want to say has nothing to lose, but I think a lot of people in Missouri are kind of looking maybe a tiny bit past them a little bit. But just you mentioned Pimpleton. Who are some of the other guys that the Missouri fans should know that could be a difference maker on Saturday?
Well, yeah, Pimpleton's going to be all over the field. I mean, he's going to be in the slot, out wide. He's going to be in the basket. He's going to be the quarterback. He's going to be the punt returner. That's a name that you're going to need to familiarize yourself with. Coming from Virginia Tech in the transfer, he's just a heck of a player and can play with the best of them. Outside of him, on the offensive side, Lou Nichols at running back. You know, Kobe Lewis done for the year, or they didn't say he was done for the year, but he's going to undergo surgery and is most likely done for the year. At the very least, he's going to play the minimum four games and maintain redshirt status. So he's not going to be a factor in this one. Nichols is a guy who was the co-MAC freshman of the year last year. Really impressive season in that six-game slate. Another guy who's in his third year on campus but is still just a redshirt freshman thanks to the new rules. Outside of him on offense, you know, there's a lot of guys who are kind of on the verge of breaking out. Ja'Cory Sullivan's one of them, who was really quiet his first couple of years here. And then when McElhane took over, kind of took that next step. So with some competent quarterback play, I think Ja'Cory Sullivan is in, you know, he's in line to be the next breakout star. Dallas Dixon's a transfer from Northern Michigan. Really great story. Basically just showed up at, you know, on Mount Pleasant's campus at Central Michigan and said, hey, I want to play. And after redshirting in 2019, came out and had a really nice 2020. Outside of those two guys, really, just a bunch of guys getting ready to break out. I mean, Joel Wilson, I could go on and on. Bernard Raymond at left tackle is going to be a guy who a lot of NFL scouts have their eye on. He's a converted tight end. On the defensive side, look out for Troy Harrison, a really hungry guy. I mean, I think he's a fifth-year, might be a sixth-year senior, former walk-on, was the MAC Defensive Player of the Year last year. Just a beast off the edge. I mean, you look at him, and he's not going to blow you away with his measurables. I think he stands between 5'10 and 6 foot. You know, he's not going to wow anybody with his size, but man, that guy's got the heart and he comes off that edge with a purpose. So Troy Harrison's another good one. Troy Brown at linebacker is very, very good. First team all MAC on defense the last 2 years. Converted safety, so he's got really good ball skills, and I think that helps with that defense that they try to play. They play that 4-2-5 where that linebacker is going to have to cover, and he does a good job of that. In the secondary, a lot of experience, but I'm going to throw a couple freshmen at you. Day-Day Hill and Dante Kent were two guys from the 2020 class who elected to stay on campus in the fall last year, and for that reason, they got very valuable experience. Dante Kent especially had an interception to win the game against Eastern Michigan. And Day-Day Hill is a guy who didn't really get to show his skill set as much, but is a guy McElhane and company love. So those two guys, I think, are going to be huge playmakers. Central Michigan just had a defensive back, Brian Edwards, who started three games from last year, transfer out. And I think that's an indication that McElhane and company want to stick with those young guys. It's kind of a long-winded answer there, but a lot of guys for Central Michigan just really on the cusp of breaking out.
Sounds good. We talked a little bit off recording, but the spread was just announced. Missouri is a 13.5-point favorite. Should the Chippewas make up that on paper two-touchdown difference, how do you think they would get that done?
I think it's going to have to start with the offense. I think Missouri, you know, everything I've seen shows that they're pretty sound defensively. And for that reason, you know, Central Michigan's going to have to make very few, if any, mistakes. The offense has always been kind of the strong suit under McElwain and company in terms of being able to put up the points. I mean, that first year they were just, you know, Quentin Dormini, the quarterback in 2019, didn't really have a flashy arm by any means, but they were still able to put up points with the best of them because of just how good their receivers are. So expect, you know, if they're going to get that done, I think Jacob Sermon, who's my pick to be the starting quarterback, is going to just have to kind of torch the secondary, getting the ball in the hands of guys like Pimpleton down the field, Sullivan down the field. And then they're going to need a good game from Lou Nichols as well on the ground, because when they become one-dimensional, that's when things go awry. And then, you know, that offense of Missouri's, I think Central Michigan can hang with it. I think their defense is in a good spot. So really, if they're going to make up that two-touchdown deficit, it's going to fall in the hands of the offense and their ability to make plays.
What do you think, how do you think this one ends up, and do you have a final score prediction?
Yeah, so I think that the Chippewas are going to battle a little bit to start. I think that the offense can hang with Missouri for maybe a half. Maybe they make it interesting and go three quarters. But at the end of the day, I just don't think they've got enough. And I think that there's still a lot of question marks. And for that reason, I think the Chippewas, I think that they just missed covering. I've got Missouri 38, CMU 24.
So they missed by a half a point, unless that spread moves. Yeah, I think that spread might move by the end of the weekend once the money starts coming in. So maybe that will mean they're covering by the time people are listening to this, but that's fine. Where can people keep up with everything you're writing going into the game for the opponent's perspective? Where can everybody find you online, Christian?
Yeah, so I'm on Twitter @CBOOHER_. And then if you're I'm going to plug my colleagues a little bit here because they do a lot of great work on, you know, we're the student, Central Michigan University student voice since 1919. You can go to cm-life.com. Again, that's cm-life.com to check out all the good stuff we're doing over there.
All right, that was Christian Boer, who writes about Central Michigan football for the Central Michigan Life. Thank you so much, Christian, for your time. Are you making the trip down here on Saturday?
Yeah, absolutely. It's actually funny. They're doing an alumni tailgate. My dad's a CMU alum, so we're making the family trip down there.
How far of a drive is that from Mount Pleasant?
Oh, gosh, it's about 8 hours, I do believe.
That's not that bad.
No, that's doable in a day.
Closer than most of the other SD schools. Like, it's about 9 to Tennessee from here, so that's not
really
that bad. Yeah, so have fun with that drive, and, I will see you on Saturday, man. Thank you.
All right, sounds good. Thanks so much.
We would like to thank our sponsors for the Columbia Daily Tribune's Mizzou Sports Podcast, University of Missouri Healthcare. University of Missouri Healthcare is proud to be the official sponsor of MU Athletics. Blue Events. Let Blue create the perfect event. Their passion for food, service, and presentation ensures that you will have a seamless and memorable event no matter the size. They will work with you to bring your vision to life. Phyllis Nichols, State Farm Insurance. There when things go wrong, here to help life go right. The Mizzou Sports Podcast is brought to you by Zaxby's, the home of handmade-to-order chicken, salads, and more than a dozen mild-to-wild sauces. Stop by your neighborhood Zaxby's today. Follow Mizzou football with the Tribune's Tiger Extra newsletter. Sign up at columbiatribune.com/TigerExtra for stories, galleries, and podcasts in your inbox every Wednesday, Saturday, and Sunday.
So, John, question. With Auburn firing Gus Malzahn, it leaves Ed Orgeron as the SEC's only coach who has beaten Nick Saban. Who's going to be the next SEC coach to beat Saban?
Well, I don't think he'll be the guy that a lot of people think he will be, Jimbo Fisher, Texas A&M. I like Lane Kiffin at Ole Miss. He almost beat Saban last year, and he almost beat Saban when he was at Tennessee.
Fisher promised he was going to thump Saban's rump whenever Alabama comes to College Station. I think he's got a shot. He improved Texas A&M to 9-1 last year. He's got a national championship to his name. If Haynes King is the real deal, he's got an early opportunity in October to beat Nick Saban.
Look at Saban's track record for losses. It's usually to a great quarterback, Cam Newton, Johnny Manziel, or Joe Burrow. Matt Corral at Ole Miss, I think, could be the best quarterback in the league.
I'm Blake Topmeyer, and this is SEC Football Unfiltered, a new podcast from the USA Today Network. Each week, we'll discuss the hottest topics that matter to the passionate fan bases of the SEC. I've covered the SEC for 8 years. As for my co-host, longtime sports columnist John Adams, let's just say he's got a few decades on me.
Not as many decades as some people think. Contrary to popular opinion, I did not cover General Nealon, but I did interview Bear Bryant and I interviewed Nick Saban, and I covered Archie Manning and Peyton Manning.
More insightful interview, John. Bear Bryant, Archie Manning, Steve Spurrier, or Johnny Majors?
Gotta go with Steve Spurrier there. He's the great quipster.
SEC Football Unfiltered debuts this summer. Let John and I be your tour guides from the season opener through the national championship. Subscribe and listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Once again to Christian for joining us on this week's Mizzou Sports Podcast. I think he's the first student we've ever actually had be a special guest, and definitely a credit to, I mean, there's a lot of opportunities, knowing that you went to Bradley and Northwestern, I went to Towson. There's a lot of these, you know, lower schools. I mean, you don't have to go to Mizzou to make it in the journalism world, and seeing a guy from a school where you don't think about as a journalism powerhouse, sorry to say, in Central Michigan, who clearly is dedicated and knows that much about his craft. I'm impressed. I'll give you that.
Yeah, no, I mean, you just got to get your start somewhere. And I mean, we were talking about it. I mean, like, who else out there covers Central Michigan like he does?
No one. I mean, that's the outlet. I mean, really, no one. So maybe you know, for bigger stories, national outlets might come in, or maybe then bigger outlets around the area in Mount Pleasant might come in. But in terms of an everyday boots on the ground type thing, it's impressive. I got to give it up to that entire outlet, Central Michigan Life. But welcome back to this week's Mizzou Sports Podcast. I'm Eric, and there's Chris also with us. I know Chris is really chomping at the bit to talk about Tyron Woodley and Jake Paul. So why don't we get into the latest Mizzou wrestler to lose at a boxing match to Jake Paul?
It's still hard for me to wrap my head around this as I fumble through my words. It's just Jake Paul as a fighter. I mean, I've talked about this with friends of mine before. It just sounds weird. It feels weird to say. And I mean, apparently he's retired now too.
No, like, he came back already.
Did he come back?
Yeah.
See, this is why I can't take it seriously. It's just so hard.
Yeah. Okay. So let's dial it back for anybody who doesn't know what we're talking about. Okay. You're an alien who just got dropped off another planet. Describe Jake Paul to me in 10 seconds. Ready, go.
He makes videos on YouTube, makes a lot of money, and fights people.
Anything more? We're still at 6, 3, 2. That's all we need to know. Okay. So, yes, Jake and his brother Logan, you know, they're essentially the quintessential, when you think about people with social media influence who maybe have let it go to their head a little bit. I'm not sure there's a better, you know, it's the D'Amelio family and the Paul family. That's really what you need to know.
Right.
And the Paul family is Logan Paul and Jake Paul. Logan Paul, I think, is in his mid-20s. Jake Paul is still a little bit younger than him, maybe a little bit older than that, maybe late 20s. Who cares? But Jake Paul might actually have some legitimate boxing skill. Like, he's not like – we're not talking Floyd Mayweather, you know, Lennox Lewis, Mike Tyson, Muhammad Ali. Nothing close to that here, but – he knows how to punch, knows how to defend himself a little bit. And so back in April, he had his first kind of quote-unquote major pay-per-view fight against former Mizzou wrestler Ben Askren. And those of you who remember Ben Askren from his time at Mizzou or with the UFC, he's a ground guy. He relies on his wrestling and his jiu-jitsu and tries to tap you out and just smother you on the ground. None of that is kind of the stand-up. You remember his fight against Jorge Masvidal back in July in 2019, and he was on the unfortunate wrong end of the UFC record of quickest knockout ever. Masvidal with the flying knee knocked out Ben Askren in 5 seconds. Ben Askren fared, I guess, a little better against Jake Paul back in April, but he still got knocked down in like 80 seconds. And I'll say it like this. I'm a fan of professional wrestling. I know a good choreographed fight when I see one. I'm not saying Ben Askren kind of laid his face out there for Jake Paul because it looked a little real, but I could find a lot worse ways to gain $500,000 in 80 seconds than just to get punched in the face once, act a little loopy, and then walk out of the building perfectly fine about 5 minutes later. From here, I expected Tyron Woodley to take the fight a little more seriously. He didn't. Like, if Tyron Woodley wanted to win this fight, he would have, in my opinion. And there's some film already going around online where Tyron Woodley might have deserved a knockdown where he had Jake Paul up against the ropes and it wasn't called. Like, I mean, Jake Paul won the fight by split decision. And both he and Tyron made a ton of money from the fight. But knowing Tyron's UFC career, and I know it's very much on the downslide, like, he lost to Usman, he lost to Colby Covington, he lost to the Brazilian guy, Bruno something, I can't remember his name. that's really going to bother me. But he was the guy who was about to fight Usman for the middleweight title, but then pulled out. Oh, Gilbert Burns, completely off. But you look at going, you know, Woodley's kind of slide, just like a five-match losing streak. You go back to just Tyron's punching ability against a Jake Paul, go back to the Robbie Lawler fight, go back to a couple other of his fights, and he clearly can punch. Like, he was a good Mizzou wrestler, but he was a better mixed martial artist. So where do you think that Tyron Woodley goes from here? Another Jake Paul fight? What would you do?
It really just depends on if you want to keep fighting, like, legitimately. I mean, because, hey, like you were talking about, like, these Jake Paul fights don't seem like they're, like, because if they were legit, he'd be fighting someone for the, you know, he'd be fighting someone for the cruiserweight championship. He'd right. be fighting for the title, be fighting for the belt. And I get it, if you're building your way up to that, that's one thing, but it just doesn't seem like, you know, I mean, he fights an exhibition against Floyd and that kind of stuff, and he's fighting.
Exhibition against Floyd was actually Logan, his brother.
His brother? See, I can't even get him straight.
Right.
But I mean, you also talk about guys who are wrestlers, who have different fighting styles, different sports, really, that are fighting this guy. I mean, but if you, when you talk about just going back from here, I mean, yeah, you just go back to what you know. I mean, go back to wrestling and that kind of stuff. I mean, I think it would be kind of a, I mean, this is out of my depth here because I'm not as big a wrestling right. fan as you, but I mean, like, go back to what you know,
right?
Being serious.
And there's a lot of combat sports. Like, if I'm Ben Askren, he's kind of said this, go back to training kids in your wrestling gym in Wisconsin, which I think he's going to go do. He made enough money. He's kind of done with the UFC. Just let it be.
Right.
For Tyron, Tyron recently just got out of his UFC contract, and this was kind of his first fight outside of the UFC since, like, 2000 and I want to say 6 or 7, and it was a boxing match. So, I mean, I don't know how much money Tyron Woodley made that hasn't been reported yet, but to me, I know the start of a good angle, if a choreographed part of storyline professional wrestling when I see one. Getting a split decision to then come back and then knock out Jake Paul just to get a tattoo, you know, there was something on the line of like, and he needs to make a tattoo visible when you put on a shirt and shorts of I love Jake Paul. I wouldn't do that, but like, maybe he's making good enough money to where that's a rational thought at 39 years old for Tyron Woodley. So I guess, you know, the saga of Mizzou fighters knocking out, you know, or not getting knocked out by Jake Paul goes on. So I do want to ask you this question, though. If you could pick any Mizzou athlete who ever that you think could knock out Jake Paul in any sport, who would it be?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. You can pick anybody.
You know, I'm gonna have a little recency bias here. Being a Bears fan, I'd pick Larry Borum.
If weight classes don't exist,
yeah.
You're going with an offensive lineman who's 6'6", 330 to go against
yeah.
Jake Paul. That's a good one. I like that. I mean, the obvious pick is Mike Chandler, who could have been the UFC, I guess would have been lightweight champion, former Bellator lightweight champion, even though Jake Paul probably has 50, 60 pounds on him. I mean, Mike Chandler can absolutely scrap. Like, Mike Chandler probably should be the UFC lightweight champion right now. He lost to another Brazilian guy who I can't remember the name of off the top of my head either. But, you know, there's a couple other guys there out there in the lexicon. Like, someone, I think when I was thinking about this on Twitter, someone said Jaden Cox. And I'm like, Jaden Cox, weight-wise, would be perfect for Jake Paul. But I've actually never seen Jaden Cox in a legitimate fist fight. Like, do I think Jaden Cox would hold his own in any fight ever? 1,000%, especially with his new kind of persona after missing the Olympics, thanks to all that weight trouble we, you know, that kind of came up. I think he would be a legitimate fighter, but I think that Jaden really wants to concentrate on, you know, the wrestling. That's more so I see his lane. I mean, could he be a pro wrestler? Could he go into combat sports? I think he'd be phenomenal at anything. I think he's a good enough, gifted, athletically talented person where he could do anything. Like, you go back, I mean, he was All-State at football as a freshman, and just it was just something to keep his time busy until he wrestled. So I don't know. I mean, we'll have to still keep our eyes on Jake Paul and Logan Paul as it involves Mizzou wrestlers, I guess. I mean, who knows? I mean, do you enjoy covering the spectacle that is the Paul brothers fighting Mizzou wrestlers?
I can't say that I do, but I mean, I do enjoy combat sports, though. I mean,
right.
I mean, when you think about the difference between UFC and boxing and just how much fun there is to have there, I mean, that's when you talk about just how good of an athlete Jaden is. I mean, if you talk about just the avenue that he can go, I mean, if the Paul brothers can learn how to box, so can he probably. So, I mean, like, it's just one of those things where just it's part of the spectacle of the sport. I know there's a little bit of showmanship to it too, but I mean, sometimes, you know, you got to separate the showmanship from the seriousness.
Fair enough. All right. Going back into Missouri versus Central Michigan football now. You attended Tuesday's press conference with Steve Wilks. We got actually have a lot of press ability in that, but they're changing it up again. You wrote a really good story about Mizzou's defense. You want to get a little bit into that?
Yeah, sure. It was something we noticed the first availability that Steve came in. I think since I've been here, at least, is that first day. And he talked about the new base, and the new base is a nickel defense. I know a lot of people talk about, a base defense is, you know, seven. A box with seven players in it, you know, the four down linemen, three linebackers. That's the base defense that everyone's been operating out of since, you know, the big dawn of time, the dinosaurs itself. But I mean, I was reading on Football Outsiders the other day, like just to kind of get a little bit more background on nickel defenses and just find a better way to describe it than just, oh, there's five defensive backs. But the nickel defense is the base defense now. That's something that a lot of teams are gravitating towards, and really even the NFL is gravitating towards that as well. I mean, and it's not surprising that Mizzou would go this way, because like we talked about earlier in the week, last year and the year before that, there was the boundary safety that Mizzou had, but that was more of a deep pass protection kind of a thing, whereas the nickel defense can protect both defenses. It can stop the run, it can stop the pass. It just depends on, you know, where that, what scheme or what play you call.
Yeah, I agree with you there, Chris. And, you know, we talked a little bit about what the differences between last year's defense might be and this year's defense. And one of the biggest changes is the kind of the fifth defensive back position. You take away one of the linebackers, you add in what a nickel, you know, defensive back would be, and it looks like it's going to be Chris Abrams-Drain, who was a true freshman wide receiver last year, starting at defensive back for Missouri this year. And again, a little bit about what that position might entail.
Yeah, when you talk about just being a nickel back, the one thing that stood out was,
look at this photograph. You said nickel back, sorry.
That's literally all I was going through my head the entire time I was writing that story. But I think the most interesting thing to think about is when you going back to the press conference, that is when Steve Wilks was talking, was just a little bit more about how versatile that position has to be. And he mentioned the athleticism, mentioned the ability to just go and play the line of scrimmage and to go cover someone, to drop back and rotate in coverages and that kind of stuff, and maybe do a little bit of zone protection that way too. I mean, when you talk about Chris Abrams-Drain, I mean, you talk about a guy that has pure athleticism. You talk about a guy that was recruited to be a wide receiver at an SEC school, a guy that had offers to go elsewhere too. I mean, that he's pure athleticism, and just credit to the coaching staff for taking him on and teaching him how to be a cornerback, you know, in a basically a summer. Like, that's, and credit to Chris Abrams-Drain for learning that too. And when you think about how quick he has to be, and that's where the receiver skills come into play. And I mean, he was supposed to catch balls as a receiver, and now he can just intercept passes too, so he's got good hands. You know, it kind of goes along the lines of like the skills transferred, and you're going to get a good athlete there
for sure. And I think that when you look at Chris Abrams-Drain and you look at the other, you know, defensive backs on Missouri, Ennis Rakestraw was named the starter again at one of the defensive back spots for cornerback over Alec Green. Then you have the or Ishbur Dean or Caleb Evans on the other side. We know we're having Martez Manuel at the traditional strong safety point. But when it comes to free safety and the nickel, you know, I guess nickel safety, nickel back, whatever you want to call it, that's going to be two converted players from other positions as the traditional starters. J.C. Carlisle is going to be out for the first half because of the targeting call all the way back from the Mississippi State game. But he came in as a true corner. And yes, there's less of a flip from cornerback to safety, but those are still two different positions. I mean, that's why people who play offensive line, you essentially got to learn the entire line, because you can kind of play anywhere. But having Abrams-Drain and J.C. Carlisle in those positions is going to be really a credit to what, you know, Charlie Harbison and Steve Wilks have done back there, where you can find your talent. Find, really, when they talk about getting the best 22 guys in the field, they're not limiting their options. And so it'll probably be Jelani Williams starting in that spot instead of J.C. Carlisle. But man, there's a lot of young talent on this defense, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, and a lot of young and athletic defensive talent too.
For sure. And it looks like, just going kind of back over the depth chart in my head, I don't have it in front of me, we did get the first one on Tuesday from Eli, and obviously Connor starting at quarterback. We know Tyler Beatty is a starting running back. We have Kiki Chisholm starting at receiver. There's a couple of ors beyond that in there. Toski Dove fighting for one spot with Dominic Lovett, but we believe it'll be Toski. And then at the other wide receiver spot in the slot, Barrett Bannister, Mookie Cooper, Chance Looper, J.J. Hester, kind of all right in there. When it comes to the offensive line, we know Mike Maietti is going to be at center. We know Case Cook is going to be at right guard. The other three are kind of a little bit open. Xavier Delgado should be the left guard. In terms of the tackles, on one side, you got Zeke Powell and Javon Foster. On the other, could be Hiron White, who missed all of last year. It could be Connor Wood, the Montana State transfer. And then at tight end, looks to be split between Nico Hay and Daniel Parker. Anybody on defense stand out to you on the from the depth chart?
No, because this is really what we've been thinking about for the last couple months. I mean, for me, the last 2 weeks that I've been here, I mean, these are the players that you look at from last year that carry over to this year. I mean, the only thing that, like, the only biggest difference that you kind of noted was the nickel defense, but that's a different position with different players. We didn't really know what to expect there. But so far, it seems like nothing has really surprised us. And when you think about that, for a team that's carrying a lot of experience back this year, that's a good thing.
Yeah, I will agree with you there. We know it's Trajan Jeffcoat's going to start. Kobe Whiteside's right there, and Akil Byers right there, and then maybe Chris Turner or maybe Makai Wingo even starting at defensive end. It'll be Devin Nicholson and Blaze Aldridge, the Rice transfer, starting in Nick Bolton's former spot at linebacker. And then we just talked about the defensive back for a long time, so we don't have to go back over those. We know Harrison Mevis and Grant McInnes will be the starting kicker and punter. And then we get back into Chris Abrams' drain, who might be returning punts and kicks for this team. A guy who's really going to step up his role from last year, where he, I don't want to say he barely played, but he had limited action across the 2020 year, to now really appears to be maybe the guy who steps up his role the most from one year to the next over this team. Really, really a guy from the Mobile, Alabama area who really could make a big impact this year.
I mean, you talked about it yourself. I mean, this is a coaching staff that's finding the best players and gets them on the field. And a lot of, we talk about the 22, but also that kind of extends to the kick returner, the punt returner too. I mean, those guys have to touch the ball in some way, shape, or form. If you can score touchdowns on that, that's obviously optimal.
Chris, what is your final score prediction for Saturday?
At first, I was going to go something like 38-24, but I mean, knowing the uncertainty at quarterback, and knowing just how experienced Mizzou is now, I'd go something along the lines of like 48-14.
Wow, yeah, that's a little bit similar to what I wrote in the Tribune a couple weeks ago. I said 45-17, which feels a little bit big when you think about it, but at the same time, this game could get out of hand at the end, especially if Central Michigan can't find consistent quarterback play. They're not going to score that many points. We don't know that much about Missouri's defense, but there still could be some, you know, surprises in there and big plays, especially with uncertain quarterback play. If the defensive backs show up, it's going to make them have a long, long day. Anything else you want to talk about before we get out of this week's episode? And, you know, we'll talk to these guys next week. Anything?
Welcome back, college football.
Yeah. All right. Well, how about this? One other game besides Missouri's you're looking forward to watching this weekend?
With my own personal interests aligned?
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Sunday, there's Notre Dame, Florida State. Notre Dame beat Florida State last year with Jordan Travis at quarterback for the Seminoles. It's going to be a lot better game this year, and I'm going to stress eat the entire time. Other than that, Monday, Louisville and Ole Miss is a game I'm going to be watching too.
Yeah, I think besides that, Clemson, Georgia's one that I'm really looking forward to in Charlotte, which is interesting considering Clemson's from South Carolina, Georgia's from Georgia, and the game's in North Carolina. And it's still about 2 hours to the same spot from Athens and Clemson. It'll be a really fun game to watch. Other than that, I mean, it's a big-time rivalry from back when I was very young, but West Virginia, Maryland, that's a big rivalry game that doesn't happen that much anymore. It means a lot to a lot of those people back in the Mid-Atlantic, so... For Chris Kwasinski, I'm Eric Blum. Thank you for listening to this week's Mizzou Sports Podcast, and we will see you next week.